Welcome to All Sides with Anna Staber. How much money should the public invest in private sports stadiums? The Cleveland Browns want Ohio taxpayers to invest more than $1 billion for a brand new stadium in Brook Park. The Browns say the new stadium would benefit the entire region, maybe even get us a Super Bowl. But other stadiums in other states haven't produced the economic booms they promised. We're spending the next hour exploring whether stadiums are good public investments, whether and what they bring to their communities that might not be cold, hard cash. Here to get us up to speed on the Brook Park proposal is Glenn Forbes, supervising producer for newscasts at IdeaStream Public Media in Cleveland. Welcome to All Sides, Glenn.
Thanks so much for having me. Appreciate it.
The Cleveland Browns Stadium story has been big news in Northeast Ohio, but there hasn't been the same steady drumbeat of articles here. So let's start with the basics. Why do the Browns want a new stadium?
Well, let's go back to the mid-90s, right? The former Browns, owned by Art Modell, moved to Baltimore. They became the Baltimore Ravens. The city and the fans fought hard to keep the names and the colors. They were able to achieve that. What happened in those next, you know, several years is somewhat up for debate, although there seems to be consensus that the timeline was so quick to get a stadium ready by 1999, when the Browns were to return to play, that some corners were cut. And the original stadium design was somewhat hastily done. And there were things in that original stadium that, was not necessarily fitting for a stadium in the new century, let's say. So the former owners, the Lerners, sold it to the Haslams, who you guys in Columbus know well down there as owners of the Columbus Crew, who saved the Columbus Crew. I'll just say now that they might be a little more popular in Columbus than they are in Cleveland, but we'll get to a little bit. We'll get into some more details about that later. But since the Haslams purchased the team about 10 to 12 years ago, they have made some stadium renovations. They've made some improvements, not only for the fan experience, but some structural things. But the bottom line is this stadium lease is up in 2028. And for a massive project like this, there's kind of a long lead time to figure out what you're going to do. And so what's happening now, Anna, is a very kind of what I would call the early stages of a very public negotiation, in some ways, a negotiation through the media to get the Haslams what they're looking for. And as you indicated, in this Brook Park project, it's $2.4 billion for the dome alone, and then tack on maybe another billion or so dollars for hotels, retail, restaurants, and things like that around it. The other proposal is to renovate the current stadium, which is on the lakefront, which estimates come in at about half that, maybe $1 to $1.3 billion. The problem with that from the Haslam's perspective is there isn't a lot of room to build there. You've got the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and the Great Lakes Science Center down in that area. To the north, you've got water, you've got Lake Erie, you can't really build there. You've got a little bit of room to the west and the south, but they are looking to Brook Park to increase their footprint and, to be frank, increase their revenue.
Yeah, there seems to be a new stadium effect where fans, like, you get more fans, you're more likely to get a Super Bowl. It seems like the NFL rewards teams that build new stadiums with Super Bowls. But what is the mayor of Cleveland saying about this project?
Well, the mayor has come out with his proposal, which to renovate the downtown stadium. Both, I should say, both the mayor, Justin Bibb, and county executive Chris Ronayne have come out heavily in favor of renovating the downtown stadium. They do not want this team to move to Brook Park for several reasons. And I'll get into those in a little bit. But first, this proposal from Mayor Justin Bibb, it's a total of $461 million, which he says gets us about halfway there. He's trying to give the Haslams, or essentially say, I'm giving the Haslams what they want. This is about half of the funding in taxpayer money to stay here in the city of Cleveland. If you look at that proposal a little further, it actually shows that maybe about a fifth of that is for the new stadium, for construction of the new stadium. Some of that other money is earmarked for repairs and renovation down the road. It's basically $461 million over 30 years. It also factors in huge increases in ticket prices, about 13% per year. So the projection is that by 2055, the average ticket price could be about $400.
Per person?
Per
ticket.
Oh
my goodness. What are you getting for $400 a ticket?
Well, that's just it. And you're talking about an average price. Now, again, to be fair, you project 30 years down the road. We've seen what inflation has done. That being said, that's sticker shock, right, for Cleveland Browns fans. And, a lot of the fans are blue collar, not all. I mean, there's all types of fans that go down to those Browns games, but many are blue collar. And there is some sticker shock there. So it's like admissions taxes. And the other interesting thing about this, Anna, is the city says they're not going to bond this out. They're worried about their bond rating. They're worried about their bond limit. What they're saying is we have other capital projects that we need to address. We can't take on this risk and, bump up to our bond limit. They're looking for another public entity to bond this out. So as I said, very early in these negotiations, one of the spokespeople for the mayor said this is a great first step. So this is kind of a back and forth. This is a volley, if you will.
Yeah, one of the entities that they're looking for potentially for bond dollars would be the state government, which means that we would need approval from the state legislature and the signature of the governor. I sat down with Governor Mike DeWine recently, and I asked him about the Browns proposal, and here's what he said.
I met with the representatives of the Cleveland Browns. I've also met with the mayor of Cleveland. I've also met with the county administrator. The latter two, as you know, are against a dome stadium in Brook Park. So I met with both sides, and I will continue. If anyone wants to meet with me, I'm always open. But this is at an early stage. I don't think it's appropriate for the governor to get involved in this. I think we have to see where the local community is coming out. I think we have to see who's willing to pay for what. We are in a situation where, with the exception of our two new soccer teams, most of our professional sports teams, football, baseball, their stadiums are getting older, and they either need to be replaced or they need to be a lot of money put into those stadiums to get us another 20 to 25 years. And so we're going to have to look at whatever happens with Cleveland, with the Browns. We have to keep in mind as we discuss that we have other needs in the state of Ohio as well, as far as professional sports. Now, many of our listeners will say, why do we invest in professional sports? One of the things that I have found when I talk to people about coming into Ohio, I talk to businesses about coming into Ohio, quality of life is just very, very important to people. It's important to people in the state. Having great art museums is important. Having great theater is important. Having great professional sports is also important. And whether we like it or not, if Ohio is going to retain these teams, we are going to have to be part, taxpayers are going to have to be part of the solution of doing that. And it's something that people can certainly disagree with, but that's been my position. And I think in the end, most people don't want to lose their sports team.
And to be clear, Governor Mike DeWine isn't saying the Browns or any of Ohio's professional sports teams are threatening to leave the state right now. But that is one of those fears during these kinds of negotiations, right? Like, if you don't give them what they want, if you don't try to work with them on this, that when that lease is up, they can leave.
Yeah, let's be honest. These wounds are still fresh in Cleveland for Browns fans. I mean, 11-year-old Glenn is still devastated by the Browns leaving. And if you're of a certain age, about 40 years or older in Cleveland, this is a very real thing that happened to us. It was, you know, and I want to make sure I'm talking about things in a sports context, but it was emotionally devastating. I mean, we talk about generations of families who have gone to Browns games, who spent their Sundays, you know, watching the Browns win, lose, or occasionally draw, mostly losing, as we know sometimes from the Cleveland Browns. And so with those wounds fresh, still relatively fresh, everyone is kind of being cautious about what is being said. But I think there is that fear, Anna, that if this gets ugly, the Haslams very well could decide to move this team elsewhere. As you said, when the lease is up, they're free to go. They own the team. And even, you know, we've seen in the past, those leases are somewhat difficult to break, but not impossible. So, yes, there's always that fear. And I would add, you know, there was a comment made by the county executive, Cuyahoga County Executive Chris Ronayne, that he has heard that there are other sites outside the county that the Browns may be looking at. I have heard some pushback on that's not really realistic. But if you're the county, you don't really want to lose a project of this magnitude either. You don't want it to go to, you know, Summit, Lorain, Lake, kind of these surrounding counties around Cuyahoga County. So it's not necessarily, obviously there is that big fear that the Browns could leave. But from the standpoint of Cuyahoga County, you don't really want a project of this magnitude going outside the county either.
Yeah, we'll get to it a little later in the hour when we expand our focus beyond Ohio. But the Atlanta Braves moved to a neighboring county over a dispute about their stadium. So that does happen. They will just move right next door in certain situations. I do want to touch on something else that the governor mentioned, and it's been reiterated by people like Representative Bill Seitz, who represents the Cincinnati area. And he has said that, you know, whatever kind of funding we give to the Cleveland Browns, like, you best expect that, you know, the Bengals, the Cincinnati Reds, the Guardians, they're going to be looking at that as a benchmark for what they get when their stadiums come in need of repair or replacement.
Absolutely. And you look at, you know, two examples I like to make is the Columbus Blue Jackets and the Cleveland Cavaliers. I mean, these are arenas that hold a significant number of events. They're already, you know, domed, right? They're an arena. It's a much smaller size, you know, between 15 and 20,000 as compared to, you know, 70,000 or whatever. But these venues are the ones that really host the majority of events, that bring the majority of people downtown throughout the year. And when you talk about baseball, Anna, that's 81 home dates. You know, for football, we're talking 8 to 10 dates. And I know we'll probably get more into that conversation as well. But that point is certainly something that the state has been, you know, state lawmakers and Governor DeWine have been eager, I would say, to make, is like, there's more than just one or two teams in the state of Ohio. Now, interestingly enough, when you look at the recent deal for Progressive Field, the state did kick in about $30 million for repairs to Progressive Field to keep the Guardians in Cleveland until, I think, 2034, somewhere around there. And then there's an option for another 15 years. But that was part of pandemic money that came in from the federal government, kind of that one-time money. And there were a number of other, I believe, minor league baseball teams that got some of that funding as well. So that was part of a package, but there is a precedent for the state to at least contribute a little bit. Though $30 million, when you're talking about a $2.4 billion project, that's somewhat of a drop in the bucket.
Yeah. We also want to hear from you this hour. What do you think about public dollars going to private stadiums, whether it's in Cincinnati, Columbus, or Cleveland? You can give us a call at 614-292-8513, or you can email your comment to allsides@wosu.org. I wonder, are folks up in Cleveland having any kind of conversation about the environmental impact of tearing down one stadium just to build another? Because ripping down a whole stadium every 30 years to build a brand new, shiny stadium in some ways feels a bit wasteful.
It is, and it does. You know, we've seen this trend in pro, you mentioned the Atlanta Braves. We've seen this trend in pro sports now for the last 30 to 40 years. I mean, back in the 60s and 70s, you had the traditional kind of cookie cutter stadium design. Since then, it has been kind of this amenities race, if you will, right? Everybody wants...
There are rock climbing walls. There are swimming pools. There's all kinds of weird things at stadiums now.
It's crazy. You know, the bells and whistles and, you know, what owners want more than anything are these luxury boxes because they bring in a ton of revenue. Interestingly, the conversation in Cleveland has been more about opening up some of that lakefront space and not having a stadium there. And there is a plan in the city of Cleveland that goes well beyond just, you know, the Brown Stadium to open up more of this lakefront area, more green space, more public parks, more accessible for, you know, the less fortunate in the community, really opening things up. And, you know, sometimes they cite that therapeutic effect of lakefront space. And there is this notion that, you know, Cleveland's been trying to develop their lakefront for 50 years. That's a whole other show if you want to have me after that. But I'll tell you, there is, you know, more than a small segment. I mean, there's a fair amount of people who believe that lakefront should be opened up for more than a football stadium, that's something that needs to be used 365 days a year, not 10. So there is some sentiment that, you know, there's a better use for that land than a football stadium.
That sounds like an argument for Brook Park. it also, you know, lake effect snow is something we all know about. And there is this real argument for, do they need a dome? Would that would arguably allow for a lot more use year round?
You know, I think a lot of people look back and say, we should have done this right back in 1999.
Fair.
But I also think that there is this, again, we talk about the sentimentality and the emotion around football. At that time, Cleveland fans were all about real football is played outside, on the grass, in the elements. It's a home field advantage. You know, that's arguable. I suppose all of this is arguable. But again, the sentimentality is we're Cleveland. We're tough. We play football outside. We play it in the grass, you know, on the grass and things of that nature. But I do wonder, you know, things would be a lot different if they had built a dome in 1999. And, you know, how much does that sentimentality mean? I think it means more to some people than others. I mean, just like anything else, right? But there is an emotional component to this for sure.
That was Glenn Forbes, supervising producer for newscasts at Idea Stream in Cleveland. Thank you for your time this morning.
Appreciate it, Anna.
Coming up, we're going to expand our focus from Ohio to the national history of public investments in private stadiums. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
New from the Embedded podcast. Female athletes have always needed grit and talent. But for decades, they've also needed a certificate.
There was chit-chat about, is that really a woman?
And even now, they're still being checked and questioned. Their story is the newest series from CBC and NPR's Embedded. It's called Tested. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Anna Staver. The Cleveland Browns want Ohio taxpayers to invest more than $1 billion to build a brand new stadium in Brook Park. But the team owners aren't the only ones with their hands out. It's a trend that's played out across the U.S. over the last couple of decades. Sports teams asking for public-private partnerships to build new, fancy stadiums. Journalist Neil Dumas is co-author of the book Field of Schemes, How the Great Stadium Swindle Turns Public Money into Private Profit. Welcome to All Sides, Neil.
Great to be here.
And we also have Savannah Holly Bates. She's a reporter at KCUR Public Radio in Kansas City. where the Jackson County Legislature has voted against placing a sales tax before voters to help the Kansas City Chiefs fund a new stadium. Welcome to All Sides, Savannah.
Hi, Anna.
I want to start with the history of building stadiums, Neil, because in the last 25 to 30 years, we've seen real escalating costs. Now, I know that stadiums use more technology. We've got multi-million dollar scoreboards. We've got heated fields in the case of the Chiefs. We've got other features that just make construction more expensive. But I got to ask, is spending at least $1 billion on a stadium just the new normal?
Yeah, I mean, I think that obviously there's new technology that's available, but from everything that I've seen, the reason that you've seen costs soar from, you know, $100, $200 million in public money in the 90s to $1 billion, and some places are asking for $2 billion now, has more to do just with that's what team owners think that they can get, right? If you think that you can attain that kind of public subsidy, you will always find something to spend that money on, whether that's, you know, a retractable dome, whether that's, you know, additional sort of ballpark village stuff next door, whether that's, you know, all sorts of additional amenities for luxury box owners, things like that. So, you know, I think that this isn't particularly just inflation so much as, you know, team owners wanting to keep up with the Joneses and figuring that, hey, if it's not my money I'm spending on this, then why not?
I do want to say that we reached out to the Cleveland Browns and invited them to participate this hour or provide a statement. They did not respond to our request. But Savannah, in Kansas City, we're the home of the Chiefs, and I should say Kansas City, Missouri, not Kansas City, Kansas.
That's right.
Yeah.
For now.
Yes. But the Chiefs, you know, they've won three of the last four Super Bowls. They are beloved. They've made a lot of national news because one of your players is dating Taylor Swift. But for all of that, they rejected a measure to invest in a new stadium.
Well, yeah, and this goes back more than a year. This most recent measure that was up in front of the Jackson County Legislature was sort of the legislature's actual last attempt to get public funding for the stadium. In April, there was a sales tax extension. That's how the Kansas City area majorly funds its stadiums for the past like 50 years, has been through a 3/8 cent sales tax that funds both the Royals and the Chiefs stadiums at the sports complex we have. Both the Royals and the Chiefs wanted that extended. The Royals wanted to build a downtown stadium, and the Chiefs wanted to sort of take over that sports complex as their own for more parking, for a practice field, stuff like that. And voters rejected that. And then after that happened in April, all these different municipalities came in. Kansas is trying to lure the teams over with public funding. The Missouri legislature is allegedly working on a plan. Kansas City itself is trying to figure out how to use public funding that does not require a vote, so not using sales tax dollars, to help fund a Royal Stadium downtown. And then this most recent ordinance that just got voted down in the Jackson County Legislature was one legislator's attempt to get another tax on the ballot just for the Chiefs to sort of reopen negotiations with the teams, because the teams have been sort of silent since that April vote.
I want to take a call from Deborah in Columbus. Welcome to All Sides, Deborah.
Hello. I'm a senior citizen here in Columbus, and way back when there was efforts to build stadiums here in Columbus, I voted every time against it. Of course, I lost it, of course, and there's some private deals made to where the public ended up having to subsidize it. My bottom line is this, that the billionaires pay for their own fancy stadiums. They have a tendency to hoard the gains and dump the losses on the public. I did taxes for many, many years, and I know for a fact that business-related expenses can be written off, so there is a benefit there. Not talking about direct gains. You know, these billionaires, they hoard these gains, but don't share them in an equal, direct fashion with the public. Oh, they dump the losses on us, but not the gains. And I'm sick and tired of people come to town, and they give all the profits to the big-time celebrities and expenses and all this stuff, and we end up getting nothing from all these expenses. It's just a darn shame. Let the billionaires pay for their own stuff, store up the gains as well as benefit from the losses, and power that goes by the way, both ways, and let them deal with it. It's tired of the public needs to quit subsidizing these people. Their pockets are fat enough.
Thank you, Deborah. You know, Neil, that kind of gets to one of those questions, because when we say public-private partnership, it implies that we're both going to invest and we're both going to get money back, right? We're going to see an ROI on our half of the investment. But it doesn't seem to always work out that way.
Yeah, it pretty much never works out that way. It's sort of the idea of modern stadium deals from the sports owner perspective is to privatize the profits and socialize the cost, right? So the public and the private entity are each putting up half the money, that doesn't mean that they're each getting half of the revenue back, right? All of the ticket revenue goes to the team. All of the naming rights revenue goes to the team, even if they don't own the stadium. All the parking revenue, everything like that.
Concessions, all that kind of fun stuff.
All of that. So, you know, and at this point, I mean, there's innumerable economic studies trying to find, you know, does the public get anything back in terms of additional tax receipts, in terms of additional job creation, in terms of additional per capita income, anything that you can sort of get as like sort of a, you know, secondary effect of like, well, we're not getting direct ticket money, but maybe we're getting the benefit of all these people going to the games. And the answer is overwhelmingly somewhere between no and hardly anything. You know, the bang for your buck on this spending is just absolutely god awful. You know, just for example, like job creation, it typically comes in around $250,000 per full-time equivalent job created, which is absolutely the worst thing that you could possibly do. You know, economists have said you do better by taking the amount of money and up in a helicopter over your city and throwing it out and just hoping that will seed the economy.
We also still want to hear from you this hour. If you think we should be paying for their new Cleveland Brown Stadium, give us a call at 614-292-8513. Savannah, the Kansas City Chiefs are being lured away by the state of Kansas, or at least they are attempting. And, you know, folks here in Cleveland or in Columbus, just they know all too well what happens when a sports team gets lured out of state. How serious do you think the effort is to try and move the Chiefs to Kansas?
It's a serious effort on Kansas's part, for sure. So they have something called a star bond, which would, in this case, pay for about 75% of these new stadiums. Yeah, it's a lot of public funding. In terms of moving markets for teams, you know, if the Chiefs and Royals moved across state lines, they would not be moving markets. It would just be a different part of the Kansas City region. But the threat to move is a big part of teams' playbook, which is what I found reporting on, you know, the funding that the Chiefs and the Royals wanted. In recent years, it's come true some of the time, you know, like St. Louis lost the Rams, things like that. But there, it's sort of, again, that stadium funding playbook. They say they want a new stadium and they'll have all these new amenities and we need public funding to get there, like Neil was talking about. Let's see if we can get $1 billion. Let's see if we can get more. If we don't get it, you know, you won't have this world-class sports team that brings so many things to your city, and we'll have to leave to somewhere that will publicly fund our stadium. And there are some places that might want a team, but as far as the football market, it is a little crowded. And so it really is... It's a gamble, and it's certainly a threat that voters and legislators have to figure out if it's worthwhile ceding to. But it is sort of a threat that every sports team makes when they want more funding.
You know, Neil, there are some creative ways that people have thought about funding stadiums. You wrote recently about the Buffalo Bills and how fans there can buy a piece of the stadium's debt for a minimum of $5,000. What is going on in Buffalo?
Yeah, I'm not sure that's necessarily more creative or just more roundabout. Buffalo and the state of New York, basically, and Erie County are selling about $1 billion worth of bonds to fund most of the cost of the new Bills stadium. Which was something that was pushed through the state legislature at the last possible second by Governor Kathy Hochul. You know, she was talking about it for months, but didn't actually submit it until like the last day of the session so that it could get sort of shoved through. And the innovative part, I guess, is that, you know, these bonds are something that now the public can buy. So Bills fans can buy, invest in the bonds that are being used to finance the Bills Stadium. The thing that I pointed out is the irony here is, of course, they will be repaid. The money they earn on those bonds will be repaid from county tax revenues, which are paid by them because they all live in Erie County if they're Bills fans. So they're basically investing in something and getting it paid back with their own tax money. So I don't know if that's necessarily a great idea. I mean, the ideal is to try to keep the public cost as low as possible, right? People all the time ask me, what's a good deal? And I'm like, if you're spending $1 billion in public money, there is no possible way to make it a good deal, right? If you're talking about, I don't know, 100 million or 50 million or something like that, then that's something that maybe you can find a way to say, okay, let's, try and figure out a way to make to repay the public cost. But that's almost never what team owners are looking for these days. They're really looking for something where the bulk of the money is coming from the public and they're not going to have to repay it with, a cut of parking revenues or anything like that.
But, Savannah, there is an intangible and non-economic benefit to having a sports team in your city, right? There's pride, there's community. In the case of the Kansas City Chiefs, they are three-time Super Bowl winners. Like, there are intangible benefits. And I think that's like how you sell it almost in a way, right? There's something special about having them there.
Yeah, and there is a, sports economists almost universally agree, like Neil said, that there is no economic benefit to publicly funding sports teams. That's not to say there's not a benefit to having a sports team in your town. And we did see this with the Chiefs and the Royals when they won their World Series in 2015. The Chiefs have been a losing team for decades and decades. You really had to be dedicated to be a fan of them. And then recently, obviously, we've been on a big winning streak, and that has brought a lot of psychological benefit to Kansas City. And then, arguably, either with the Super Bowl or with Taylor Swift, that has brought some economic benefit in terms of small business boom to the city. Now, that doesn't necessarily go back to taxpayers. That does go back into the economy, in how small businesses pay for things or where they shop. There is another benefit, though, that sports teams can offer communities, especially when they get public funding, and that's their community benefits agreement. And Haslam, who owns the Browns, who are asking for this money, also is now a minority owner of the Milwaukee Bucks. And the Milwaukee Bucks are sort of the gold standard for a community benefits agreement. When they got public funding for their new stadium and entertainment district, the Deer District, they promised a community benefits agreement, they've now signed it, that promised that in exchange for public funding, they would allow stadium and entertainment district workers to unionize, give them higher wages and benefits, and sort of make working in that area a bigger benefit, something that could turn into a career. And then hypothetically, those people who are now making more money would spend it in town. Again, there's not a big economic benefit, but a community benefits agreement is sort of seen as a way to, if we're giving you this public money, at least there is some public benefit in terms of workers' rights or small business participation in the entertainment district, stuff like that.
Neil, my final question for you is about lifespan of stadiums, because one of the things I found in prepping for this episode that I thought was really fascinating is that you go back like 100 years and stadiums would last 50, 60-ish years. Now, the shoe here at Ohio State University is a bit of an outlier. It's more than 100 years old, so it's been around for a minute. But this idea of holding on to a stadium beyond 25 to 30 years is kind of where we're at now. How did we go from 50, 60 years, maybe keeping certain historic stadiums for 100 years, to every 25 to 30?
Yeah, 20 years ago, when the Orlando Magic were looking for a new arena, when their old one was only about 15 years old, I asked that exact question to a sports economist named Rod Fort. And without missing a beat, he said, if I'm a sports team owner, I don't see anything wrong with getting a new stadium every year, as long as I'm not the one paying for it. And I think that's what's going on, right? Is it's not like stadiums get old faster or get obsolete faster or fall down faster or anything like that. It's that team owners have realized that you can get away now with saying, oh, my 30-year lease is up. I need to start talking about a new stadium. Or my 30-year lease is 10 years away from being up. We can start talking about a new stadium. So you've seen teams like the Atlanta Braves and the Texas Rangers get new stadiums, just 20 years or so after the previous one was built. And I really just do think it's about, what sort of the standard is and what politicians will put up with in terms of not saying, "Hey, didn't we just build you one?" Because team owners can say, "Oh, look, everybody else is getting one when it's only 2025 years. So if you're building one for us after 30, then that's a bargain." And I think, this is just something where political leaders just really need to start pushing back and saying, the old one is still pretty new, and maybe there's a need for some upgrades, but that isn't really our problem. This is really something. If you want to make more profit off of your building, then maybe you should invest in it. And if it's not worth it to you, right? If spending $500 million is not going to reap, pay off in terms of if new revenues for a building, then maybe it's just not worth it, and we shouldn't be underwriting that.
That was Neil DeMoss, author of the book Field of Schemes: How the Great Stadium Swindle Turns Public Money into Private Profit. Thank you for your time this morning.
Sure thing.
And thanks to Savannah Hawley Bates, a reporter at KCUR Public Radio in Kansas City, Missouri. Thank you.
Thank you, Anna.
Coming up, we're going to dig into the numbers on stadium lifespans and their returns on investment. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
New from the Embedded podcast. Female athletes have always needed grit and talent. But for decades, they've also needed a certificate.
There was chit-chat about, is that really a woman?
And even now, they're still being checked and questioned. Their story is the newest series from CBC and NPR's Embedded. It's called Tested. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Anna Staver. The Cleveland Browns want to build a brand new stadium in Brook Park, a suburb on the west side of Cleveland. They also want taxpayers to invest in it, helping out with about half of the $2.4 billion price tag. We're talking this hour about the Browns project and how sports stadiums are funded, whether the economic benefits promised by team owners ever become reality. Victor Matheson is a professor of economics and accounting at the College of the Holy Cross in Massachusetts, and he specializes in sports. Welcome to All Sides, Victor.
Thanks for having me.
I want to start with this idea of a free lunch. What I mean by that is how politicians talk about revenue that will be generated from a stadium. There is this idea that the community invests $1 billion, but we'll get it back in sales tax or other revenue mechanisms, that it won't cost us anything. And it always gets me because I think to myself, that money comes from somewhere, right? It's not a free lunch.
So it's not a free lunch. So, I mean, we should just start out by saying that economists not associated with teams and leagues have been doing research on the economic impact of sports teams, of franchises, of stadiums, and of mega events for about the last 30 years. And it is the unanimous opinion of all of this peer-reviewed research, well over 100 published articles on this, that stadiums, teams and events have little to no economic impact by almost any measure you can measure. Employment, unemployment, taxes, personal income, GDP, even tourism, not much impact there. One rule that I use is take whatever the supporters are telling you for an economic impact, move the decimal place one place to the left, and that's probably a pretty good guess about what you're really going to get out of a stadium. There's reasons why the numbers don't add up in the ways that they do. There's a perfect example here in Cleveland. Again, moving economic activity just 10 miles down the road over there into Brook Park, down from the lake. That's not generating new economic activity. That's just relocating where economic activity is occurring in the greater Chicago metropolitan area. And the folks who do these economic impact statements, they're pretty good at adding and multiplying, but they're not subtracting the economic impact that was occurring on the lake already.
And there's also this idea of, let's say we get more concerts. We get a dome stadium, we get more concerts, great. But there is this principle of, okay, I went to a concert, so I'm not going to go to the theater this month, or I went to the concert, so I'm not going to go out to dinner a lot this month, right? Like, I have chosen to spend my money on a football ticket or a concert ticket at this stadium, but that doesn't mean I'm spending more money than I would have normally.
And so we all have fixed budgets. We all know this. And this is what's known as the substitution effect. And it just substitutes where we spend our money. Let's also be very clear that we're not talking about a gigantic number of additional concerts either. If we compare Cleveland to its neighbors in Minneapolis, in Detroit, and in Indianapolis that have dome stadiums, you're looking at an average of about 2 additional concert nights a year at those dome stadiums, as opposed to places like Cleveland or Buffalo that have had outdoor stadiums over that time. So you're not talking about a gigantic number of events either. There are only so many Taylor Swifts and Beyonce out there who can fill a 75,000 seat stadium. So it's not as if you're going to build a dome stadium and all of a sudden it's in full use and packed to the gills 365 days a year. A stadium, no matter whether it's domed or outdoors, is going to be dark over 90% of days a year.
I want to take a call from Mike in Columbus. Mike has a question about how much profit we should try to get as a public. So welcome to All Sides, Mike.
Thank you. My question is have communities, or should communities ask to have a percentage of the profits, or even a percentage of ownership, when they're negotiating for these stadium deals? If they're going to invest in it, it seems like they ought to have a specific return on the investment, just like investing in anything else.
That gets into contract negotiations, and that is that question, right? It's a public-private partnership. That's how they describe these. So shouldn't there be a public return on the investment?
Yeah, let's be very clear. What we mean by public-private partnership is that the public's going to pay some of the cost, and the private part of that is going to be the profit. So I think Mike's exactly right. In a reasonable world, someone who puts up half of the equity for the stadium should get half of the profits out of that. That will never happen, and it's never happened before, with the exception of the odd case of the Green Bay Packers. But the NFL is not going to allow that to happen again. It's actually prohibited in the NFL statute. So, yeah, this is socializing the costs while privatizing the profits. And we should point out that, the Haslams have been done quite well. They bought this team in 2012 for about $1 billion. There's going to be new valuations coming out in the next week about what we estimate that team, the Browns, are worth, but it's going to be worth about $5 billion. So this is a team that, even aside from all of the operating profits year after year, just in terms of capital gains, appreciation in the value of the franchise, they've made $4 billion over the last 12 years. That's more than enough to build the entire stadium just with their profits, and not even digging into their actual, other fortunes from running truck stops. So, we would never be having this conversation about a McDonald's, right? Or a Macy's, or a Barnes & Noble, or any other sort of businesses in here that we would expect the public to pay for half of our factory, but somehow we lose our minds when it comes to sports, and we expect the taxpayers to pay for half of the cost of our, what's essentially our store, or our factory, our means of production. Again, pure socialism here, but it's crony capitalism, right? Because it's enriching billionaires at the expense of regular taxpayers.
I do want to say again that we invited the Cleveland Browns to participate in the conversation this hour or to provide a statement. They did not respond to our request. But there are intangible benefits to having a sports team in your city. like pride, community, entertainment. And I do think people are willing to pay for those perks. So I'm wondering, if we ignore the economic benefit of a stadium, if we just say that's not a thing, do we have any sense of what a community might be willing to pay for a sports team?
I know, it's so funny you said that. Not quite in preparation for being on here today, but I actually watched the old movie Major League last night, obviously about the great Cleveland, fictional, but about the great Cleveland Indians run to the pennant, their 30-year-old movie there. And again, a lot of that movie is about the public pride associated with having a team and how that can unite a community. And that is definitely worth something. And it, as it turns out, economists have actually measured this in a variety of different ways. And the numbers we get are somewhere between $30 to $100 million of community benefit in total from having a stadium or having a pro sports team, which of course this stadium would lead to, you know, guaranteeing the Browns stay around. Number one, the Browns are very unlikely to be going anywhere because the Haslams know what a great community this is. This is a sports fan community that's been willing to put up with one playoff win over their ownership time, two winning seasons in the last 13, 54 games under 500 over their ownership, and yet the fans still show up. So this would be foolish of them to abandon just because they don't get their toy out in Brook Park. So you wouldn't be losing the Browns in the first place. And again, even if it is $100 million of additional feel-good value that you get, remember, we're asking for $1.2 billion of subsidy here. So I am not a complete zealot on the anti-stadium funding. I don't think that zero, I would prefer to see no public funding at all, but you wouldn't make me too upset if you say, hey, we're going to give $50 million, we're going to give $100 million, we're going to put a couple hundred million dollars into infrastructure in order to make sure that fans can get to the stadium and get to the games and get to concerts. But that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about $1.2 billion of funding, and there's no feel-good benefits that we can identify that would justify that level of subsidy.
I also want to talk about ticket prices, because one of the things that seems to happen when you get a brand new shiny stadium is the cost of things go up. The cost of concessions go up. The cost of the tickets go up. The cost of those luxury fancy boxes go up. And I sort of wonder, this idea of the fan experience is really taking off in the last couple of decades. And to me, it seems to mean just spending more money to attend a game.
Well, you're right. And the thing is, this new stadium, if it's domed, it'll be a great fan experience. It'll be a wonderful place to go see a game. The problem is the Haslams know that it's going to be a wonderful place to see a game, and therefore they are going to be able to extract all of that extra amount. So if you say, hey, you know, indoors, better sight lines, better accommodations, it's not, 3 degrees below zero on the lake on those December games, and I'm willing to pay $50 more for a ticket because of that, the Haslams know I'm willing to pay $50 more for that ticket, and therefore they'll charge me $50 more. So we do see about a 30% increase in ticket prices when teams build new stadiums in basically the same location in the same city. It's good for the fans. But again, if the owners know it's good for the fans, they can extract that extra value out of folks. So again, way better watching a game at a place that's a super nice stadium, or like the Guardians, far better stadium than the mistake on the lake that it replaced. Far better than like a Fenway or a Wrigley that are great fan experiences only because of the old timiness there, but they're terrible stadiums. But of course that means the tickets are much more expensive because they know this.
Yeah, and that's a whole other conversation, whether professional football ticket prices are getting beyond the reach of average Americans.
Well, the fact that the Browns still sell out every game suggests no. But again, be careful what you wish for. I kind of wish for a new Ferrari, but I know how much that will cost me. I'm not going to get one. Be careful if you're a Browns fan wishing for that beautiful new stadium, because that beautiful new stadium is going to cost you.
I will say the renderings are lovely. Like the Brook Park renderings that the Browns have released, they look beautiful. I mean, they would, right?
Oh, no, there's no doubt. And both from an engineering and from a just a public use sort of standpoint, we make stadiums today much better than we made them 25 years ago when the current stadium is, and of course way better than 100 years ago when the original Memorial Stadium was there on the lake. These are nicer stadiums, but again, the question is, are they that much nicer that you want to pay that sort of amount? And of course, the real question is, who should pay for that? So again, I don't think any economist is anti-stadium, but almost every economist is anti-public subsidy of stadium. If Jimmy and Dee Haslam want to go out to Brook Park and build a stadium with their own money, God bless them. Let business people do what business people do. But if they're going to ask for public money, there's a much higher bar that should be set. And no economist thinks that an NFL stadium meets that bar in almost any situation.
That was Victor Matheson, a professor of economics and accounting at the College of Holy Cross in Massachusetts. Thank you so much for your time this morning.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you all for listening to All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.